Let's take just a moment away from the episode to talk about a brand new program that we have coming at Notre Dame of Maryland School of Integrative Health. In addition to our Masters of Science in Yoga Therapy, we've developed a new certificate program. This certificate program is specifically designed for people who have licensed healthcare practitioner status or have a master's degree in some other field, but you'd love to get a certificate in therapeutic yoga to be able to help your clients in clinical settings, educational settings, and community health and wellness. This program for people who already have LHCP or have a master's degree is a 15-month program. It's one class per semester, and it's a really fantastic, groundbreaking program, unlike any other program I've seen in the nation. I'd love for you to come and check out our LHCP therapeutic yoga program at Notre Dame of Maryland. We have open houses every month, and we can tell you all about it, or you can email me to get more information. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the episode. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. As you know, in Season 10, we are looking at the eight limbs of yoga from Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, and we're going to spend about 1 month on each of the eight limbs and have special guests as well as solo episodes with me, Amy Wheeler. Today, we have a very special guest, Ashley McKeachie, who I've known for a really, really long time. And she is talking today about ahimsa and how it shows up as a lived experience with the classes that she teaches to elderly adults. When we talk about ahimsa, we're looking at it first from our relationship with ourself, our inner experience. And this includes how we speak to ourselves, how we interpret mistakes, how we respond to discomfort, and even how hard we're pushing ourselves or allowing ourselves periods of rest. It could also include things like having harsh self-criticism or suppressing some emotions that you don't think you're allowed to feel, or even neglecting yourself and not taking good care of yourself. So in this way, ahimsa is really inviting kind of an honest and supportive inner dialogue. And I think after you hear this interview with Ashley, you will see how she's teaching elderly adults to do this in real time. We could also look at ahimsa as a relational presence with others, which might include your kids, your colleagues, your partner, your friends, your acquaintances. And it has a lot to do with communication, speaking in a way that people can hear what you want them to hear, maybe even setting boundaries when appropriate, and behaving with loving kindness towards one another. So this relational nonviolence, it's not passive. It's not avoiding. It's actually going in and relating to others with a lot of skill, and it requires clear and direct expression and hopefully the ability to work through misunderstandings. So again, I think you'll see throughout this whole interview how Ashley is setting that up in her classes so that her students can learn to do this. And then, of course, once we're feeling that self-compassion and sweetness and kindness towards ourselves and sharing it with others, it's only natural that this would basically spread out into the world, including the ways we behave, our lifestyle choices, our habits, the ways that we offer ourselves to the world, and always asking ourselves, does what I'm doing and saying and being contribute to the harm, or does it contribute to stability and well-being? I think you're going to really enjoy this interview with Ashley. She is an amazing, amazing human, and I am so thrilled to hear the work that she's doing in the world. So let's go meet her, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy this one. Welcome. Whether this is your first time listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour, or you've been with us for an entire 3 years, we just want to say that we are ready to go deeper now. This year, we'll be studying the eight limbs of yoga with a variety of guests, and we hope you enjoyed this season. Let's go meet our guest now. Welcome, Ashley. I'm so happy to have you here today. Where are you joining us from?
Well, right now I'm from sunny Huntington Beach, California.
Oh, wonderful. I'm in near Minneapolis, Minnesota, and it was like 7 degrees below zero the other night, a couple nights ago. And tomorrow it's going to be 72 degrees.
I don't understand how that works.
No idea. Like, what is happening? So, well, we were just kind of chatting before we started recording, and I'm like, stop right now. I want to get what you're saying recorded because it sounded so beautiful. So can you kind of tell us where you're working and then this part about a dream you didn't even know you had?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that really kind of came out organically, but I always feel like it's so easy to connect with you and talk with you. And this is so exciting for me to spend time with you, Amy. So thank you again for allowing me to be here. Yeah, so I really thought that I was on another path and yoga was in my life. So I knew that that was going to be a big part of it. But I started teaching at Orange Coast College, which is a community college in Orange County. And I started teaching there in 2014. And it was all yoga and it was awesome. And I developed a program where I was able to create a 200-hour yoga instructor training program that was incredibly affordable. Most of the students could take the program and it was paid for through financial aid. And I did that from 2014 to 2025. And I had always thought that mentoring students and getting them to that next level of teaching was the dream. And then in 2023, I applied for a position because I was part-time at Orange Coast College and looking for more opportunities to work. And I applied at Saddleback College. And Saddleback College had an announcement. This is a community college also that's based in Mission Viejo, so more South Orange County. And they were looking for fitness and wellness instructors. And I thought, well, you know, let's see what this could possibly, you know, do for me and what I could do for them. And I ended up interviewing for a position where I teach a variety of different classes where there's a very strong academic component, but it's to this whole other group of students that are seniors. So I had spent basically 10 years of my life working with the matriculating student, you know, someone that was 18, 19, 20, 21, and you know, all of the challenges that come with that. I'm 50 now, and I was starting to think, you know, my goodness, I don't know if I have the energy to support these young students. Right? I mean, you and I have had a very similar path, and I look to you also as kind of how the trajectory of my life has been. You know, you understand what it's like to be around students that are young. Wow. There was a heaviness that came with that, especially after COVID. Mm-hmm. During and after COVID, I felt like there needed to be so many more mental health resources in place, and there just never seemed to be enough. Yeah. So when I was at Orange Coast College teaching the matriculating student. And then of course there came to be, you know, more older students, but it just was hard on my heart, very heavy on my heart. Yeah. And then in 2023, I happened to just find this announcement and applied for it. And now the population that I teach to is on the totally other end of the spectrum. And these are seniors. And in my classes, I'm teaching folks that are 72 years old and on an average. And I teach classes where I have 95-year-olds, 96-year-olds. We're celebrating birthdays, you know, 90, 91. And it is everything from chair exercise to balance and mobility to yoga to Pilates. But it's with an academic component to it. So our students are really learning. They're doing assessments, their quizzes, all that good stuff. But it's always, always through the lens of yoga therapy. So I was saying earlier that, you know, this is the dream that I never even thought existed in my heart, but to be able to use all of my education, all of my experience as a yoga therapist, and apply that now to the senior community in all of these variety of classes is a dream come true, is a dream come true. Because when I was only teaching yoga and training students to become yoga, it was a wonderful opportunity. And I really thought that that was going to be my destiny. But here I feel like I'm bringing those folks who would never, ever even think about trying a yoga class. And now they're learning all about yoga in every class that I teach. That's just in my tissue. So they're like, I've never taken a class like this before. And I'm like, well, actually, it's yoga therapy.
Oh my gosh, I'm just in heaven here. Because first of all, for your entire time I've known you, I've probably known you 15 plus years.
Yeah.
You've been what we call the bhavana queen, meaning you help people narrow in on why they're here, what their gifts are, what they want to offer to the world, create a visualization of that and manifest it. And to hear you say that you have manifested something you didn't know existed or you needed or wanted or would love is so refreshing, because you're very focused to get where you want to go in your career, but somehow there was even something larger than you at work that also played into the equation. And I just think that is really beautiful, because it happened to me too at Notre Dame of Maryland. I had no idea I was going to end up there. And it just goes to show that even when we are bhavanizing, there's an element of surrender and knowing that we aren't the doer.
Absolutely. Yes, I would love to talk about that for many, many minutes. And it's actually something I bring about too when I, you know, hear about the students in my class, when their friends are like, you know, Marlene turns 91 today, or, you know, Klaus just turned 90. And I think to myself, of course, there had to have been choices that you made that got you here, but there also has to be something greater that, you know, some part of this universe has a plan for you. And while you might go about, again, doing the very best that you can and thinking you're going to be moving in one direction, there's definitely something else out there that is encouraging you to, you know, maybe step in this direction, or opening up a door for you, or keeping you healthy and fit. I spend my days basically creating confidence in the students that I'm around. You know, how do we prevent accidents? How do we get stronger? How do we balance our nervous system? How do we encourage better relationships? Because when things happen, just like the other day, one of my students, Marlene, who's 91, went to the Saddleback College campus and fell. She was by herself, of course. You know, they're driving by themselves. They're 90 years old. They're fully capable. She went to the campus by herself, and there was something in the road, and she didn't see it, and she fell, and she cracked open her forehead, and no broken bones, no nothing. She came to class 3 days later, and I just thought, there is something bigger at play here, because I can teach you all the squats, all the sit to stands, all the breathing techniques, but my goodness, your life here is supposed to be living life to its fullest, and we still need you here in this world. So I absolutely believe that, because it was so interesting too, just going back to you and your experience in retirement.
Yeah.
Right. I'm like, Amy is going to be, she's going to own a farm. There's going to be a lot of cats. I'm excited to go. Where can I donate my money? Where can I send all the cat toys? And then to hear now what you're doing is just blows my mind. I'm like, that is not what she said she was going to do.
And we never know. And just to kind of complete this loop, I would imagine working with people 72 to 95 shows you more and more and more how much surrender is required in this human experience, and how it's not so linear. And there's miracles every day, and then there's things that aren't fair that happen every day that, you know, we didn't expect to. So I would think that would be one of the joys of working with an elderly population is getting to see them at their most wise point of life.
Yes, I feel incredibly grateful. Not that my students before didn't provide me with an abundance of learning opportunities, but here I kind of am in awe. I walk into a room, some of my classes, they range anywhere from 40 people to 115 people. So these are a wide range, 55 to 95, average age of 72, lots of my students, 80s, 90s. And I look around and I'm like, I'm in awe of resilience, of the fact that, they say to me all the time, like, there's nothing I can do. You've taught me, Ashley, to breathe. That is probably was you who said this many, many times, which is, that is. In yoga therapy, that is our superpower. And that's what we can teach our students to have at any moment to help them through anything. And I think that that's mostly why the students keep coming back to all of my classes because of the emphasis of the breath. And the breath keeps them in that right mindset, which they have adopted from probably a very young age, if they're making it to 90, which is, you do not give up. You do not give up. You pick your battles. You let things go. And you continue to wake up every single day and make a difference in this world in whatever way you can. So I am walking around in awe.
It's so fantastic that you have all of these acharyas, the people who are walking the path before you, and you get to watch it for hopefully the next 50 years. Because if you're around 50, it's such a blessing.
I hope so. I really do. I feel like now that we have all of this information, science, and research, it's like now I know too much about myself. I know too many of the things that I might be suffering with or, things that might hold me back. But then in another way, I'm getting ahead of it. Right, where now I have the information so I can make the best choices now to sustain my life. And, I was just talking to my sister's kids who are, gosh, 10 and 13 about nutrition. And it's all about they just want to eat the food that tastes good. And I'm like, well, it's not really about that anymore. Now you have to eat food because it's nourishing and it's nutrient dense so that you can perform the best, you can think the best. And so we were going back and forth where they didn't think that that was right, but we're trying to find a happy medium there.
Oh, well, I think this kind of brings us to our topic of today, which is this idea called ahimsa. And we traditionally kind of, define that as non-harming in thought, word, and action, or non-violence. But I think in a therapeutic and lived experience, a more precise understanding might be kind of our commitment to not only reduce harm, but to support well-being within ourselves and then in connection with others. So let's just jump in here and say, how do you define ahimsa in the context of aging bodies and their nervous systems?
I love that. And I'll just back up just a little bit because I think this is such an important series that you have for your podcast for the next several months. And, yoga philosophy has always been so important to me. And I've always gravitated towards it even more than kind of the Western sense of what yoga is. It's really more of a passion of mine than really anything else. I would say yoga philosophy is the first, and probably pranayama breathing techniques are second. And I remember going through my master's program at Loyola Marymount University in yoga studies, and the major professor there is Christopher Chappell, Dr. Chappell, and he told us a story where he said that when he was growing up, he had a guru, a female guru in upstate New York, and they would have community sessions together and they would choose one yama or niyama to focus on for a whole month. And I thought to myself, that is really cool. You know, I've never even thought about that. You know, we kind of think like ahimsa, satya, sneha, brahmacharya, you know, all the things, and you're expected to practice them every day. And yes, they are our foundation. But my goodness, a whole month of journaling and conversation and reflection, that sounds amazing. And that had always been in the back of my head. And then when I started teaching at Saddleback, the very first semester, I just kind of wanted to get an idea of who my population was and if we aligned and all the things that I was passionate about, could they be passionate about that too? So I started to implement that same idea, except I took one yama and I'm on my fifth semester now. But the very first semester that I decided to implement this, I talked about ahimsa for the entire 18 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. And so when you ask me, you know, how do I define ahimsa? I did some research on what text can I use for my classes, because these are college classes or non-credit college classes, totally free for the emeritus population, 55 and older. And I found this text called The Yogi's Way, Living in Accord with the Yamas and the Niyamas. And it's by David McGrath. And I love this book because it gives you so many different opportunities to delve into what it means to you, what each one of these pieces, each one of these ethics means to you. And, you know, wanted to underline a few to share them with you and everyone that's listening, because yeah, we think about ahimsa as non-harming and non-violence. And here he has like 45 synonyms of what ahimsa could be. And from my training, you know, I just kind of assume that everyone is going to go with the definition that I've been taught and what feels, you know, resonates with me. And it's always been non-harming, and it's always been loving kindness. That's always how I have thought of it. And here, David McGrath goes into, well, ahimsa could be compassion, protection, concern, balance, universal love, overcoming conflict, considerate, thoughtful, understanding, acceptance, flexibility, respect, appreciation, clarity, peace of mind. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And through those 18 weeks, I was able to find out from my students what ahimsa means to them. And so I think the idea that we all kind of came together and what resonated with everybody is this idea of ahimsa as being loving and kind, and loving and kind to yourself. And in these group classes where there could be 40 people to 115 people, that this journey really starts with themselves, even though the yamas, really it's about others. And I think, well, gosh, in this day and age, and especially in the senior population, they have been dedicated to ahimsa for decades, taking care of their family, now their partners and their kids, you know, who might be going through some really severe illnesses. So when we have talked about ahimsa, and it's also something I bring into every semester, because of course, it's the most important thing and affects everything that we do, is that this loving kindness really starts with them, and this compassion starts with them. It's an acknowledgement that I am here for me. And that is the very first step to regulating someone's nervous system. And I find that that is incredibly powerful. And I weave it into everything that we do in every class.
I love that you pointed out that traditionally the yamas are like our social disciplines.
Right.
Really, if we're not doing that within ourselves, we're not going to be able to authentically share that with anyone else. It's not authentic. It's almost like you're pretending. Unless you've cultivated that tenderness and vulnerability and willingness to have self-compassion and like not push through the pain and try to be an overachiever, like, if we haven't embodied that ourselves, we're not going to be able to share that with our aging parent or our child who lives with us or our best friend, you know?
Absolutely. And I have been taught this in all of my training and in our tradition of the KYM and Desikachar. You know, this practice that we do every morning, it starts with us. We have to have ahimsa. We have to have that, because if we don't have that for ourselves, how can we possibly share that with anybody else? How could we teach anybody else? How can we encourage anybody else? And how does that continue to spread? And that ahimsa, I think, especially for this population, because I look out into this sea of individuals and I see fierce adults that have been through so much in their life and continue to get up every single day and take care of this world in some respect. And you've got to have ahimsa. You have to have that for yourself if you're going to continue to be the best you can be and continue to thrive. And so at the very beginning of every single class that I teach, there is an acknowledgement and an intention that's set. We have to set time every day in maybe some stillness, which is, okay, am I going to listen to myself? Because I'm going to get information. My nervous system is going to tell me, it's going to tell me all of it, but I have to pause and set that intention that that's important. I'm important, which is very, very different than I think a lot of these older adults have ever experienced their lives, where it hasn't been about them. It's been about everybody else. And that's very difficult. I see a lot of type A's in my class. I'm type A. I totally get that. We are competitive. We want to excel even when we're 80, 90 years old. There has to be a time when we say rest is as important as you finishing the race.
Yeah. You know, you and I are kind of in the same age category. And the way that I view our parents in this age group is that they are really, really tough.
Oh, yeah.
They had to push through a lot to make it through life. You know, maybe some could say that they made it easier for us because they worked so hard. But I actually think they pushed us pretty hard, too. Because they wanted us strong for this difficult life. They saw all the challenges and pressures. So, you know, when you get in that mindset of keep going or it's over, I can see why they would need to come back to that self-compassion and kind of relearn it and feel again instead of just trying to survive.
I love how you used the word tough. I went to a wonderful weekend, retreat, and someone called the active aging seniors tough agers instead of teenagers, tough agers. And so you're allowing me to recall that. And I just thought, yeah, they are tough and they encourage us to be tough 100%. I absolutely see that. And there is something, you know, that I have to constantly be reiterating through every class that I teach, which is like, pay attention to your breath. Are you working so hard that someone can hear your breath three seats down? There are cues. There are, you know, ways that we can recognize if we're pushing ourselves too much, but they do. They push that. That is like embedded in them. And it is incredibly inspiring. I mean, I've never, ever in my life spent this much time with this population where, you know, the age doesn't match up with what I see. And it was so funny. I just had a conversation with someone on Facebook Messenger who, you know, I said, yeah, you know, our students are anywhere between 55 and 95. And they're like, and they drive? I'm like, yes. And they can get to the location by themselves? Yes. They can get up and off the ground by themselves? Yes. Like, there are huge communities that are very, very active and very strong and have a lot of muscle and a lot of brain power. I'm so lucky to be able to experience that every day. Everybody has the mindset of someone in their 30s. And that's also something that they're trying, I think, still in their 90s to come to terms with. I feel like I'm young. I think I'm young. I'm still pushing my body. And that is creating an imbalance. And I'm still seeing that at 90 years old, that I'm like, oh, wow, you know, as many times as I'm saying, slow down the breath, it should be long and smooth, you can barely hear it, you know. If you've been breathing that way and getting through very difficult times for the last 80 years, then this is going to be a difficult system to shift.
And it worked for them. You know, most of us aren't willing to give up something that has worked for us for 95 years, right?
That's true. That's true.
So, do you have any of them that have like chronic pain? And are there like guarding patterns? Are there bracing patterns? Is there fear of movement?
I don't think anyone really knows what to expect when they take my class. They have an idea of what yoga is, or balance and mobility, or Pilates, or chair exercise class. But then, because of my experience in education and the lens that I teach through, I see through, they're going to get what they need, but probably later on than what they expected.
I never dreamed they even needed.
Exactly. One of the greatest compliments I could ever get came from one of my students just a couple of weeks ago, who said, I was getting ready for my colonoscopy and I hate going to the doctor and I was trying to distract myself and I was, you know, looking on my phone and I was doing all this stuff. And she's like, and then I just heard you in my head, slow down your breath, slow down your breath. And then we do these brain and balance fun little dual tasking activities in all of my classes. And, you know, I'll say something like balance on one leg and spell my name forwards, and I'll spell my name backwards out loud. And so she said, I was breathing in and out of my nose and I was spelling your name forwards and backwards. And then I felt better. And then I had a really great colonoscopy. And I was like, I never thought I'd hear the words coming out of my mouth. That's so awesome. So when someone comes into my class the very first time, you know, I think that they're used to protecting. They're used to being very careful, which I think has also encouraged a long life, right? You can't take major risks. So they're not going to push themselves out of their comfort zone. My classes are really slow, and I give the students a chance to experience and explore different variations and modifications. So it always is up to that individual to make the right choice for them, and they don't feel rushed. And I think that that's kind of the sweet spot. And what I see after even just a week of meeting someone for the very first time that comes into our classes, they're always open enrollment, is that there's a softening. They feel very much taken care of and safe because we're not moving quickly. Now, not to say that we don't do a lot. I mean, our classes are 50 to 75 minutes. Some students take three classes in a row, which I just like, this is incredible. They'll take a Pilates class, an intermediate chair exercise class, and a yoga class. It's incredible. But what they've learned, I think, from me is this is yoga in a way that we've always hoped it could be. And it's a system. It's philosophy and connection within and also with the person next to you. It's Sangha. It's one-pointed focus. It's utilizing what we learn here and applying it to your life. It's so much of this technology that they feel safe in that. There's a safety in that system. So the bracing patterns or the control, most people, it's pretty incredible, but they get it. They get it pretty quickly.
Wow. It sounds to me, and you know, we all who are teachers of yoga teachers, we spend so much time teaching the framework and the structure of the technology of yoga, but you're getting to use it in real time with older adults and see it work, right? You're directly to the customer now.
Yes. And when I was teaching, you know, at Orange Coast College and responsible for grades and for, you know, final exams and all of that, you know, I think that's when you really see students an imbalance in their nervous system. There's a lot of pressure, right? You have a grade assigned to it. Well, these students are students of Saddleback College. They register exactly like a Saddleback College student would, a matriculating student, but there are no grades. Their attendance is mandatory in a lot of ways where, you know, of course, they're going to see results. And once you get into that routine, then you have a community of people that you're seeing all the time. So we really want to encourage consistent attendance. And you just see, though, that they want to learn so much and they get excited about all of the special types of yoga, especially in the KYM tradition, that is so different than anything that they've ever done. You know, I just taught over the last 2 weeks a finger niyasam. And they're like, where can I learn more about this? And I'm like, well, you probably won't find it on Google. You have to keep coming. Yeah, there's not going to be in a book. It's not going to be here. This is what I've learned from my teachers. And they've learned from the established teachers in this tradition. And so I'm passing that knowledge down to you. And they love it. They love it. So learning, I think, also helps them regulate their nervous system. It helps keep them feeling comfortable and excited and enthusiastic and supported. There is a great support. And I'm always just so in wonder because I think we're in a gym. We aren't even on the Saddleback College campus. We're in the Laguna Hills Community Center, the Dana Point Community Center, where it's like four basketball courts. And we're in this big empty space and people are falling asleep in Shavasana. And I'm like, there's lights, there's bleachers, there's people getting up. And then all of a sudden I'll be encouraging everyone to get up and we'll be leading them into the next part of the class. And then I see like five people just completely passed out on the ground. And then they wake up and they're like, oh gosh, was I snoring? And I said, no, I'll make sure that you never snore in class. But it's so cool to see that when you teach in this way from that yoga therapeutic lens and you involve the system of yoga, how that affects the nervous system in any place, anywhere. It could be in a major gym. It could be also in your doctor's office right before a colonoscopy. It's pretty cool.
Absolutely. And another thing I want to ask you, I mean, you're working their balance, their strength, their flexibility, their breath capacity, their mental focus. But there's a tool that I'm imagining when you say that some students might stay for two or three classes in a row, they're pretty much there all day. Yep. What about community or sangha for these older adults? And I could even imagine that being very regulating for their nervous system.
Absolutely. That is one of the greatest gifts I think that yoga has brought to us. Sangha is everything. And I think from my own experience and trauma growing up, and even in certain communities where I feel like I just haven't really belonged for some reason, you know, I might be like, I'm cool. Hey, you know, I'd love to be a part of this group for whatever reason. It didn't work. Those experiences have really impacted me where Sangha is essential. It is essential. Community is essential. And I will go out of my way to make sure someone feels welcomed. And I have a lot of assessments that I do, a lot of activities that I do in class, where it's partners, it's group work, it's memorizing someone's name, it's finding out, you know, what you have in common. And so one of the greatest joys is to hear a group of students going out to lunch. And I'm like, did you know each other before this class? No, we just met in class, you know? And I'm like, oh, that just gives me the chills because what I found in this population is there's a lot of loneliness. You have women, predominantly women in these classes, and they have outlived their partners. Their kids have moved to more affordable places in the country. I mean, we are in South Orange County, and if you haven't bought a house in the last, you know, 10 to 50 years, it's going to be very difficult for you to find housing. So, you know, there's so much involved there. And if our students aren't taking advantage of these big classes and opportunities to meet others, then it can become very isolating. So you're exactly right. Sangha, community, mandatory group work, you know, that where people are like, I just want to do the yoga. And I'm like, this is the yoga. This will change your life more than Warrior Two. You know, the relationship that you build with the person next to you is so much more important. And that's what I want you to understand. And that's what I hope to share with everyone. And I will look to see, I'll always scan a room and I'll see, okay, this person hasn't been talking to anybody. How do I bring them in? I do not rely on them to make those connections because that's difficult. That's hard. You know, if you have been by yourself or have had some maybe trauma associated with joining a new group or feeling like you're a part of something, and I do my very, very best to just find those folks and I bring them into a more talkative group. I also do something that I've been doing for quite a few years that I learned at Orange Coast College was to put a little name card next to everyone's mat, in front of their mat, and they get their name card when they come into each class and it's written very big on their index card. I memorize their name. I want them to know they are seen, that they belong here at Saddleback College. They belong here in this group, no matter what I'm teaching, whether it's chair exercise to yoga. And that when they're not here, we miss them and it's not the same. I do my best to reach out to students. I mean, I have hundreds of students and I do my very best to reach out to them and encourage them to come back and find out what's going on. And that's why it's so important for them to continue to have this routine, is because illness is getting in the way, not just their illness, not just their injury or chronic pain, not just their doctor's appointments, but finding out more about how their family is really going through a lot of changes, cancer, MS, lots and lots of different types of challenges. And the best thing that they can do is come to class.
Yeah, I would imagine that if their partner is still alive, that there's a lot of caretaking that could be needing to happen. And in that instance, you know, helping to live the loving kindness and the tenderness and the, you know, ability to be patient with someone who's not feeling well and get them what they need. So I could imagine how all that you're teaching would transfer into being a caregiver. But also I wanted to ask you, I would imagine with people at this age, you're seeing them go through various levels of decline functionally, from losing the ability to walk or losing memory. So do you have students that you kind of are actually watching them decline over the year? Or maybe they have to go into the hospital and they are gone.
That's a great question. So this is my third full year of teaching at Saddleback. And luckily, I'm going to actually probably give you an answer that you wouldn't expect, is I'm actually seeing more alertness. I'm seeing more strength. I'm seeing more consistency in class. I'm seeing their numbers improve. We just did an entire assessment on grip strength, and we did a whole section in every single one of my classes, whether it was balance and mobility or yoga. I brought in a dynamometer and we tested their grip strength and did this whole series, and are still in that series with using a stress ball and doing all these different kinds of cool things and seeing the improvement. So mostly what I see in my classes are, it's actually pretty interesting. I'm thinking about one gentleman in particular who first came in a couple of semesters ago, and just his posture was a little bit hunched. He looked a little low energy, definitely more guarded than what I would have expected, you know, from a gentleman like that. And now that he's in his second semester with me, I see his posture has improved, his confidence, even the way he's speaking to me, way more clear, way more strength in his voice. There's more conviction in his voice when he comes in and there's a project or a group assessment that we're working on. He goes right into a group. He doesn't need help anymore with that. Honestly, I'm seeing more improvement, more stamina, more strength, more balanced nervous system. But I am, of course, every so often noticing that someone isn't coming to class. And it really, though, isn't happening very often. I would say that maybe over the last 3 years, maybe two people. One gentleman has Parkinson's and he had to move into a home and doesn't have the ability to use his car anymore. So really trying to depend on someone to take him to our classes is really tough. And then there was an email sent by one of my students' daughters who said, "My mom isn't coming to class anymore. Can you drop her?" And I said, "Well, sure. Can you just give me some more information? Is she okay?" And she's like, "Well, she's 98 and your class is a little bit too strenuous for her." I thought, 98? What? And that's the thing that I'm dealing with is I'm seeing a population in front of me that is not coordinating with their age. And that's where this whole idea of ahimsa is just absolutely so important, because if we're dealing with these connections that kind of don't make sense, we do have to step into our bodies with ahimsa, with this loving kindness, with this idea where I'm not going to push myself, even though I probably can. And that if I'm going to maintain my attendance and my independence and everything that I want to do in my life, I'm going to need to make better choices. Well, with better choices comes more clarity. With clarity comes that, again, that heart connection. What am I doing? How am I treating myself? What is that talk happening internally about? And so lots of opportunity for awareness, understanding, observation in between different techniques that we're using in class, even through different asanas or different breathing techniques. The ahimsa is the most important tool that we use, and it is implemented from the very first minute that class starts.
I'm imagining people that are with you 2 and 3 years, and one day it will be 8 and 10 and 17 years, you know, like when you hear these messages day after day, and each semester you have one of the yamas, and then, you know, 5 semesters later, now you're starting the niyamas. And you know what I mean? Like, it's really profound. I think this is what yoga is supposed to be, that you have kind of a consistent sangha and leader, and that you get to go deeply into things and slow down and really digest it and work with it over many, many years. And it's making me think, Ashley, somebody needs to study what you're doing and this group and show the longitudinal data for how potent these practices are on all the layers of the human system. Have you thought about doing some research?
I would love that. So I just started my full-time tenure track position in the fall of 2025. And I'm the chair of the department as well. I'm the only full-time faculty. We have almost 40 adjunct faculty who I try to support as best as I can and give them the information from the meetings that I go to and helping them improve their classes. They're all phenomenal instructors. And absolutely, you know, I had this dream. We'll kind of see where it goes. I'm going to set that intention, but research 100%. I would love, love, love to do something like that. And also to think about maybe creating a blue zone at Saddleback College and seeing with all of the amount of, you know, centenarians we have, you know, through the emeritus program, or at least, you know, getting close to that. There's so much I'd love to do in this department. And I really do hope that I can live to be 100 years old. We talk about retirement, and I'm just thinking that's just, I mean, of course, I have you to look to. Retirement doesn't exist.
Ew, it would be so boring.
That's true. It's true. And yeah, it doesn't seem like that would be interesting at all. But yes, I would love to do more. I just have this desire to learn and to make an impact in this world. And I've even applied to get a second master's at Cal State Long Beach in the field of gerontology. I'd like to learn more about the adult population. And I'm thinking that through maybe my thesis, that there's some research that I can be doing and present to that so I can have maybe a couple of years to work on it. But I have the people, I have the population, and I have the consistency. So I think that sky's the limit. But I think through that program, that will help me get the support I need to maybe, you know, get more data so that I can create something really special.
Yeah, there's so many people that have kind of a situation, not this fantastic, but something similar that they're like, hey, I've got the people, I can collect the data. But what people don't realize is that what a PhD is to go to school for 5 years to learn how to run a study properly, right? So it's almost like people like you need to hook up with a principal investigator. Even as a master's degree, we get a lot of great information about research, but to actually be a principal investigator and be able to get the grant to fund the research. So I'm going to keep my eyes open because
thank you.
Send you a PI that can really help you structure it properly. With all the hard work you're doing, you get published and we get to see this longitudinal data over time. We need a Richie Davidson that wants to on your projects, Ashley.
I would love it. I think you saying this and putting it out there and with my tenacity and again with the group of students who I know would be so excited to be involved. They see and feel and notice a difference. And it really is impacting not just the way that they feel, but, you know, just like we've been taught all along, you know, what Desikachar said about, you know, yoga is relationships. And when I hear students come up to me after class, this just happened to me a couple of weeks ago, too. It seems like we're here at the midpoint of our semester. So they've had 9 weeks of consistent class, you know, where you're getting all of these tools and techniques in one class. And I had someone come up to me who's a new student. I really didn't recognize her. And she said, I've had an epiphany. I can't control the way my husband thinks. And she's like, so I just have to let it go. And I was like, you got that from, you know, 9 weeks of yoga. Wow. That's pretty awesome. That's what we hope to all get.
Something she probably hadn't been able to figure out for 40 years.
And isn't that incredible?
Like,
yeah. Yeah. And it starts with, again, how do you want to treat yourself today? Mm. How are you going to be able to make a connection with yourself today? And is it through loving kindness and compassion and understanding and patience? Because I'm going to give you 75 minutes twice a week to dive deep into that, you know, and then everything else kind of builds itself around it. But we start with a breath connection, with an intention, and it's always about being more kind and considerate. So that whole ethic of ahimsa, I feel it even more so in my life too, you know, with all of these big responsibilities that now that I have in my life with work, and I don't want to let anyone down, but I have to do a lot of ahimsa work, which is, you know, am I being too hard on myself today? I have a whole list of things and that list just seems never to end, but is it the right thing for me to do is keep pushing to get it done? Or is practicing ahimsa the most important thing to me right now? So there's a lot of work that I'm doing on myself too. Those high achievers that I see also, you know, with all of my students, ahimsa is even more important, you know, for all of us, because if we want to have that sustainable energy, if we want to do all the things we want to do and continue to be independent, that has to be at the forefront of our existence.
I think that's the best thing about being a yoga practitioner and teacher and therapist, is that every time we're saying these things to our students, we're actually saying them to ourselves also, and having that reminder of, oh yeah. I told my husband yesterday, I teach for an organization, and I said, I'm getting paid really good money to remind myself who I want to be, you know, so.
I love that. You know, our classes at Saddleback College, the Emeritus Institute, we have half of them are online, and we have asynchronous classes where students are seeing videos every week that they're committed to, or some of the classes are live on Zoom. I'll be teaching more consistently are some asynchronous classes. I'm creating these videos. I'm in my room. I'm by myself for 60 minutes, 75 minutes. I am teaching a class to an imagined group of people, but you're exactly right that the message that I'm sending is really to me. That message is really to me first. And then they're a part of me. You know, from this book, this David McGrath book, you know, he said, ahimsa is about recognizing the unity of it all and that the oneness of it all. And we are each other. And that is like the greatest gift of ahimsa is recognizing our humanity. So when I am speaking to myself, I'm speaking to all of us. We are all one. We are all included in that. And so if we can lead with that, then why would we want to harm anyone? Why would we want to hurt anyone? Why wouldn't we think before we spoke? Why would we want to keep these things for ourselves instead of being giving with all of this abundance? I really love that because I think you're exactly right, is I'm teaching for us all, me included.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a lovely place to end. Thank you so much for being here, Ashley. Do you do any kind of trainings or teaching outside of the university, or are there retreats that you teach? Like some people may want to come find you. Are you mainly at the university now, or do you do other things too?
So I teach full time at Saddleback College and doing more and more, you know, committees and working with the college and trying to make an impression, my own impression on the college. So that is taking up the majority of my time. You know, these classes through Saddleback College and the Emeritus program, it's not just for folks that live in California. There are so many different states, but I think there's like 30 to 40 states that could actually take our classes online. So if anybody is interested in taking any of my classes, check out the Saddleback Emeritus Institute, because there's probably a good possibility that you might be able to take all of our classes for free, and you can find me there. And then I would say that the other place that I teach at Rancho La Puerta. And this is a place, Amy, that I've always wanted you to come to. And I know that our friend and teacher, Larry Payne, has been teaching there for many, many, many years. Indra Devi also is affiliated with the ranch in Tecate, Mexico. I'll actually be there for just a week this summer, but we'll try to come back for more weeks in the summers as we continue on. And that is like the most amazing environment. If anybody is looking for 1 week of deep work where they really, really, really want to get back into nervous system balance, food is organic. You have classes from hiking and classes from the morning till night. You have world-renowned authors and doctors and psychologists coming from all over the world to speak. You have musicians and poets and authors. I mean, it's just an incredible week. So I will be there just a little bit this summer and then hopefully more weeks, because that is where I feel like I have a, gosh, time in nature to really refuel, find that stillness. Sometimes being in nature away from it all is the absolute recharge that we need. Yeah. So that's where folks can find me.
Amazing. We'll put these things in the show notes. So,
Amy.
Well, thank you, Ashley, for talking to us about the importance of ahimsa with this generation of people that is learning it in the later years. And I appreciate all that you've done in the world. This is your latest reinvention, but you've had many chapters before this that were all equally as wonderful. You're really using every bit of your life force to do good in the world. And I love that.
Amy, I would not be here without you. You are one of the few teachers in my life that have supported me and guided me and encouraged me. And your voice is in my head before my colonoscopy. I always think about, what would Amy say? What would Amy do? And I'm just so incredibly grateful, eternally grateful that you dedicated your life to yoga and this tradition and to academia and to research and to yoga therapy and to making this world a better place and all of your animal activism and gosh, supporting so many thousands and thousands of people over the time that you have existed. And I'm so incredibly grateful to you. You are the top of the top, the baddest. You are the baddest girl ever. I love it.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I'm glad that we found this time to get together, both very busy women. And we will talk again on this podcast, I'm sure. So thanks, Ashley.
Thanks, Amy. Namaste.
Thank you so much, Ashley, for being with us today. And I want everyone to know that we have the audio version of this podcast on all major platforms like Spotify and Apple. We have done over 200 episodes, and we have had over 200,000 downloads. And we hope that in some small way, we have supported you mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. If you'd like to support the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast in 2026, there's several meaningful ways you can do so. First, you can become a member of our Patreon community and donate as little as $5 a month to keep the podcast going. Your contribution helps us to sustain the depth and quality of conversations on the podcast. A second option is that you become an Optimal State mobile app member for both Android and iPhone. Again, this is about $5 a month, and we're going to start providing a lot of amazing content on our mobile app in 2026. We'll definitely want you to be part of that community. We also have a book called Applications of Therapeutic Yoga in Integrative Health. This book will be published by Routledge Publisher in 2026. It's written by Amy Wheeler and Marlisa Sullivan. We hope you'll consider purchasing this book when it comes out. Again, the name is Applications of Therapeutic Yoga in Integrative Health by Wheeler and Sullivan. For those of you who are seeking advanced training in therapeutic yoga or in yoga therapy, please consider checking out the programs at Notre Dame of Maryland School of Integrative Health. We have a MS in yoga therapy, and we also have a post-master's degree therapeutic yoga for licensed healthcare providers that's starting in the fall of 2026. In addition, we have a comprehensive Ayurveda certificate program also geared towards licensed healthcare providers. Each one of these programs is a pathway designed to support healthcare professionals and yoga teachers and yoga therapists who are ready to integrate these teachings into clinical, education, and community settings. All right, thanks for listening and thanks for supporting the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.